It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here. Captain Mike, how are you?
Doing fine. Glad to have you back, Captain Sean.
Yeah, man, that was good.
A little trip.
I chased some trout. These were
different
smaller
trout.
These were smaller than the new 15-inch regulation. These were brook trout, and they were about 8 inches. But, yeah, had fun. Got to go out to Rocky Mountains National Park with the family, do the camper thing, camper van, round to the park, and hikes and fishing and all that kind of goofy stuff that I dig so much. I tell you what, on the hunting front, I sat in one spot up on top. They have the the altitude's high enough you get up above the tree line there.
Yeah.
And there's actually a road called Trail Ridge Road. You can drive it and get up there. And I found an overlooked spot, and people were – first of all, just a side note, and we don't want to keep them holding too long, but we have Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, on. But give me just a second.
He needs to hear all this, too.
The number of people in the United States, Director Bannon, the number of people in the United States that cannot differentiate between, I'm not even talking about an elk and a moose. Okay, I could say fair, you don't live out there. A bighorn sheep and an elk look nothing like each other.
Yeah.
Okay, they are very different critters, and there are people sitting there going, man, I think the guy had binoculars. He said, yeah, I spotted some sheep over there. I said, because I love bighorn sheep.
Yeah.
That was my big, I didn't end up seeing one. I get the big 10 by 56 or 15 by 56 Vortex binoculars out, get braced up, looking, start glassing. And I'm like, well, there's some elk. He's like, yeah, those. I said, that's not a sheep. That's an elk. But and then sat there and glassed from one spot. Now, we're inside the park and everything, but glassed over 200 elk from sitting at one place, watching them all over this huge, wide-open landscape. Really cool. But no sheep. Saw plenty of mule deer, but no sheep.
And you can't hunt there either.
That's right. That's what I'm saying, inside the park. But I like just watching them.
Yeah,
when you
get
to see 200 elk from one place.
Absolutely. And
but they are not bighorn sheep. Now, it's a little easier to identify speckled trout and flounder and those kind of things. Right, Director?
Well, that's true, and I guess I should quit being disappointed that people sometimes have a challenge between juvenile king mackerel and Spanish mackerel. If they can't tell sheep and elk apart.
That's right. So there you go. Let's set the bar there that I'm sitting next to fellow Americans, even though there's lots of people from other countries at the National Park, but fellow Americans that were telling me, go look at those sheep. And I say, well, those are elk. So, yeah, it is on the fishery side, maybe a little tougher. Hey, thanks for joining us this morning, because there is so much to talk about that's now new law here in August.
Yes, we had some bag limit changes, the size limit changes that began August 1st. So
what's the story? Like, let's walk through, because I know y'all put out, of course, on the Facebook page for Alabama Marine Resources and through the emails and outdooralabama.com, but this is a chance to run down through that list again so we make sure everybody knows what the rules are.
Sure. So what came into effect now is some bag limit changes for speckled trout and flounder. So speckled trout went to what we call a slot limit, 15 to 22 inches. And a reduction in bag limit to 6 fish per person. And that was based on some stock assessments that we did, and then we held some public meetings about what type of management plan would work well for anglers, and those changes seemed to be agreeable to the public, and also from a management perspective would allow for us to continue a relatively healthy stock of trout and hopefully build the trout population. And then on the flounder side, we had a reduction in bag limit to 5, and then we moved the size limit up to 14 inches. And then we also created a commercial bag limit of 40 fish per person or per boat. And so those are a little bit more difficult sometimes to grasp, because our flounder population, according to our assessments and our landings and different things, it's struggling a little bit. We really want to get that going again. So we also have a stock enhancement program that we're working on to hopefully within the next year, we're going to put 50,000 to 60,000 juvenile flounder back into the system to help kickstart that.
I don't know if people had caught our discussion in the past on this, but this is kind of an interesting – I want to get back into speckled trout too, but on the flounder side, not enough boys out there, huh?
Well, the boys go offshore to spawn, and they don't come back. It's the females that come back. So for our breeding program, we actually had a challenge finding the males because they don't live as long. They only live about an average of 3 years, and the females live about 7 or 8 years. And so they make a spawning migration in November, and we're also going to be closed the month of November for both recreational and commercial anglers to allow those fish to make that run out to the offshore areas where they're going to spawn. And so the males will stay, and then the females come back in.
So, but it was like what we need. When, in y'all's assessments, there's way more females in the population, or is that just inshore because of the nature of the migration?
In general, due to the nature of how they migrate in their life cycle. So most of what you would catch in state waters would be females if they're of legal size. And we moved that size limit up a little bit because, as with most all fish species, as they get a little bigger and a little older, the sexual maturity rate increases, so that's a greater spawning potential, greater opportunity for more babies to be put into the system.
Now, with the flounder that you're releasing, is this going to be a program that you're going to do every year? Is this a one-time thing?
No, we're going to continue it for several years. We have some funding in place to get all the equipment. We have locally caught stock that have been in our tanks for some time. They have to acclimate, and we have some juvenile stock that we're going to grow to help keep things genetically diverse. And we'll start this program, probably working really hard on it here in the very near future of getting everybody in the tanks and getting the schedules lined out, because we'll artificially create seasons for them and some different things to help promote spawning.
It's interesting. I know it's not unprecedented because of what has been done in Texas, but when we think about stocking and think about it in a marine, you think about stocking for salmon and trout species, right, to cold water. But I haven't ever really thought about it for our saltwater species, but it's not new, right? Texas has done this.
That's correct. And we've had some stocking programs. We do some pompano right now, and we recently just finished up our red drum program. We had a red drum program for several years, and so we're going to now concentrate on the pompano and the flounder, and we potentially may look at a third species. We have enough room in our facility that we could look at a third species. So we're trying to look at what are priority species for the anglers of Alabama, and what stocks probably could use a little bump. It's tough to get enough numbers to say that you're really impacting it. Flounder, I think, is one that can be because of the numbers that we're at now. So I'm really excited about that part of the program.
Well, maybe double do the flounder. Instead of looking for another species, why don't you maybe do double flounder?
And can you stuff them with crabs while you're at it?
Well, yeah. But I'm just saying.
Stock. And again, you also don't want to upset your age class years too bad, and you got to be careful of the genetic diversity in any of those things. So that's one thing about enhancement programs like that is you have to look at a lot of different factors in how much you actually put out there. Now, there are put and take fisheries. Alabama has a trout fishery on the Sipsey River.
Yeah.
But these are to be in the system and become part of the system. And we'll do some genetic marking so that we can test down the road the hatchery fish. How have they interacted in the environment? Are we seeing them long term? Are we seeing their babies in the future?
To nerd out for a second, okay. So, and the study of genetics and where we are now with the genome is amazing. What can be done? Can you down the road? Do you know? Can we catch a flounder? Y'all can sample, and you can say this is one of the hatchery flounder, or this has some genetic code from that hatchery flounder. I mean, would you be able to trace it back like that?
Yes, you'd be able to determine it from this group. Was it related to any of these where we had these mothers and fathers here? They do it in the salmon fisheries on the east and west coast. It's very common on the farming, so that if there's an incidental release, you can track it. The genetics has come so far in the last few years. It's an amazing tool to see where your stocks are and what impacts are happening. And
solid evidence. That is exciting, because if somebody questions why we're doing, you can say, well, okay, this fish is here because.
Yeah.
That's correct. And you can determine sometimes, is one stock interacting with another? Because, you know, we have the Gulf of Mexico that where we live, and there's discussion about certain fish stocks. Do they travel between the Atlantic and the Gulf and back and forth? And so the genetics really helps narrow that down and look at some of the travel patterns of fish. It's amazing the stuff that can be done through genetic testing.
All right, let's do this. Can you hold on? We've got to run to the break here.
Sure.
Okay, coming right back, more with Scott Bannon, Director of Alabama Marine Resources. We'll go dig back into speckled trout limits. Also, we're snapper fishing right now, so we'll be doing that through Tuesday. What about the quota? Where do we sit? We'll get that. And also, as they listed on the official documents, cobia change, ling length change. Yeah. We'll talk about that as well. Coming right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along on this Saturday, the first Saturday in August. And we're snapper fishing as well. We'll get to that as we have our further conversation with Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. We talked flounder there in the last segment, but we did start off with a little discussion of the change for speckled trout. And I don't know if you have it in front of me. I was talking to Captain Bobby Abrascato Thursday morning on the morning show about the last time there had been a change to the speckled trout limit in Alabama. And to be frank with you, I don't remember it ever being different than it was just back in July.
We made some changes, I believe about, now I'm getting old when you can't remember how long ago it was. It seems like it was only a few years ago, but it was actually quite a while. We did away with the two undersized fish that you could have. That was a change. But other than that, I believe it was probably in the mid-1990s, I think, when we started down these recent,
when we
the changes.
Yeah, we had, I mean, I guess I should have put it better. We didn't have any regulation, and then the change was to the 10 fish at 14, right?
That's correct.
So this is the first change in a long, long time. It's going to take some getting used to for folks. I mean, this has been...
It will.
So
and it's there are a lot of people that fish nowadays, and so it is a tough burden to get information out to everyone. So our officers will be out in the field, and as they encounter people out fishing, you know, they'll have that conversation. Hey, don't forget the size limit changed, the possession limit changed, and so we'll spend the next year really working hard on that to engage people in the field.
Do you know what it's like to try to erase Sharpie marker on coolers for 14 inches or on rod butts for your wading rods? You know, I have to put all new Sharpie marks on my stuff.
I understand, but I think you can do it. I think you can make the effort.
Thank you. I appreciate your confidence in me.
So let's make sure everybody understands. Speckled trout went from 14 inches to 15 inches. It went from a 10 fish limit to a 6 fish limit. It went from you could catch 10 fish any size, didn't make any difference. They could all be 30 inches long. It didn't matter. Now they're all between 15 inches and 22 inches, and you can keep one over that size, right?
That's correct. As a matter of fact, I'm going to take you around with me to explain that to people. Thank you.
Okay. And as we go through the stuff that we're hearing on social media and make sure people know, you don't get 6 fish and then one over 22. That overfish is part of the 6.
That's right. Yes.
You should not have more than 6 speckled trout per person per day.
Yes.
That's correct.
Right.
One of those can be, in the same idea, I mean, it kind of follows the formula for redfish, you know, that you have this slot and then you have one of those can be an oversized fish if you believe in chainsawing through a fish to fillet it. That's just me personally, but if you want to keep a bull red.
And it's, so most people that fish for trout also have been fishing for redfish, you know, there's similar habitats and different things. So I think it'll be a fairly easy transition for most people. It's just you have to change the habit. It's something that you're not used to. And I don't think people are opposed to doing it. It's just, oh, I got to remember to do it.
All right. What are you and your crew with Marine Resources trying to change with these limit, the slot and all that? Where's the finish line on this?
That, good question. And I've asked the same thing. I said, so what do we try and get to? So what we were seeing right now is what we call this spawning potential ratio and some other numbers having to do with the recruitment of juvenile fish back into the system. And it was starting on a negative trend. So you want to stop that negative trend and you want to level things out. Then you want it to start to build back up. And you have to make a determination of what is what is rebuilding and when is it rebuilt? And that's a difficult decision because things change. One for us is the number of anglers. So right now the number of anglers is very, very high. And so if we can get it to stabilize, then we're really good. And then if we can get that trend to start on the rise, then that's even better. And then you have to determine where is that happy medium. So I've asked my staff that in 3 years we do a follow-up stock assessment so that we'll look at landings and some different data every year. But at the end of 3 full years, we need to do a stock assessment and say, where are we? What have these changes done, or have they done anything, and take a real good look at it.
Yeah, I think that's good. I know it's good to hear, because one of the worries of what happened with federal, now we're talking about state, where we have people like the director talking to us right now, having a finish line is important. Because in the federal policy, a lot of us feel, whether it's right or wrong, that this restored number or something is something unrealistic or something unachievable, that you take these penalties and changes to Snapper to try to achieve something that you'll never achieve. In this case, I think having a finish line, having you and the crew there define what we're trying to do so it can be gauged against progress is important to know. You got to know where a finish line is. Or what we're trying to accomplish.
That's correct. And that's what Kevin Anson, our chief biologist, does a great job of helping me through some of this, saying here's the things that we can look for, and here's where we can start setting the goal line. And so we get these reviews. And again, if you don't make the effort to continuously monitor it and look at it, then why make the change?
Right.
You know, so
right.
We need to make sure we have some vision on it.
Well, do you think that after 3 or 4 or 5 years, if things are really looking good, that you would go back to a 10-fish limit?
Well, I think that's what you look at the end of that 3 years of where is the stock. And, again, you want to see some upward trends or, you know, stop the negative trend, see a stability. Then you look for the upward. And if it gets to a point where you're like, hey, it's going to maintain its balance at this level, which meets our angler effort, meets the stock, you know, the stock only is going to have a certain amount of capacity anyway. But I think the answer is yes. You could look
okay.
at addressing those things to either relax a bag limit or adjust the size limits a little bit. And we hear that loud and clear from the public, and you and I have discussed it on the show before, that once you make a change, that's it. It never goes back.
That's been the problem.
Open to change.
You are open, and it's good because you have to be able to put pressure on to change, you know, change it back or whatever. We have to know what's fixed, what's the finish line, so we can work to achieve that as anglers here along the Gulf Coast, and then get back to where we were. And not to walk in and set off a smoke bomb here in the room, but maybe a discussion for another day. Maybe this is something I can have with Kevin Anson or something. But the capacity, and this goes back to when talking about deer hunting. I mean, you can have, if you do lots to do habitat improvement, you can have more deer on the property and they'll still all be healthy. If you don't do that, you have to take deer off the property to keep it healthy, just like a bass pond.
Sure.
So the same thing, I mean, it sounds to me, if there was more food, right? I mean, I know that's not just a one component thing, but if there was more food in the system, there could be more speckled trout possible, right? You have a bigger headroom on it.
Sure, there's a combination of things, especially with fish, just like with any other species, is environmental conditions. So there has to be a food source. There has to be the environment that they thrive in, the environment that the juveniles thrive in, which is generally different. So it's a lot of it is habitat-based, which is like our neighbors in Louisiana, with a loss of habitat due to erosion, that really impacts these inshore fisheries. And the same thing, we only have a limited amount of habitat for these species. And you're right, that is a Kevin conversation. He's more than happy to come talk about those impacts and those changes.
Absolutely. All right, so off my nerd soapbox here and back into, so we've gone through changes for speckled trout and flounder, and all that information is online as well. We'll put the links up. Now let's talk about the fact we're snapper fishing today, and it's August, man. It's August 3rd.
It's an amazing thing that we have been able to flex the date according to the effort and the landings, because the weather caught us, which is the benefit that we have promoted with state management, that we need to be flexible and be able to work towards our quota. And when we have impacts such as a natural disaster or anything like that, that we can make the adjustments to the schedule in very short turnaround times so that the anglers of Alabama get to fish the amount of fish that they've been allocated. So that's what got us to this August 1st opening with the amberjack. So you'll be able to catch amberjack and red snapper together, which we hear from the public a lot, to have a multi-species season. We had this opportunity. The weather this weekend is hit and miss a little bit, which is summertime in Alabama. Mm-hmm. But I think we're going to have a good weekend overall. People are going to get to catch amberjack and snapper.
It's why Mike and I are heading out on the water today. What we're talking about. I know it's, and it should be way longer, not 5 days, but the idea of, regular folks fill up the tank on the boat, whether they're going to go catch one species or multiple species, and it's a bigger deal once they put the gas in the boat and take the time to get out there that they can keep another species. That's a big deal, man, for regular folks.
Sure.
It is, because we, our money is important to us, and we saw we were going to have this opportunity. We could move the days to cooler weather, of discussions. And I said, amberjack, and I talked with the commissioner, Chris Blankenship, and our chief biologist, Kevin Anson. We roundtabled this, and that giving people the opportunity to catch these two species together, they're going to be fished in the same areas together. Catch your amberjack, and then, your snapper, kind of the bonus. You don't have to spend as much time out there to get a cooler full of meat.
Yeah, Scott, answer me this. The people going out fishing today, tomorrow, Monday, what can we catch and keep? We can catch everything out there, but what can we catch today and tomorrow and Monday and bring home with us if we're going fishing out there right now?
So right now, of course, the things that you're going to see the most of course, you'll have red snapper through the weekend until Monday night. You'll have amberjack, which opened on the 1st. And then you're going to have beeliners are still available, and I've had some great reports of beeliners. You got to know the spirits, and you got to know how, and I understand there's the battles with the snapper sometimes. Gag grouper is still open if you get lucky enough to find one of those. The gray snapper, now whether you call them gray snapper, mangrove snapper, mingay, black snapper, I don't know how they got so many names.
Me either,
no joke.
You're
right, they do.
they're available. Your king mackerel and Spanish mackerel are still available this time of year, so. I mean, there's a lot of potential to really make a great day of it, depending on the weather.
Yeah. Okay, well, we can't catch triggerfish right now. We want to make that clear that you cannot catch triggerfish and keep them right now.
That's correct. And so some of your listeners may have seen we put out a press release talking about the Snapper Check program. We have an option for amberjack and triggerfish to be reported in the Snapper Check system. So triggerfish is not open, but it is an optional species in Snapper Check. I would encourage people to put their amberjack in there for the weekend, because those are real numbers as opposed to surveyed numbers. And we're going to start looking at amberjack, and when triggerfish opens back up next year, that we look really hard at those.
I want to circle around all that. We got the head to the break. Can you hold on for a second?
Absolutely.
All right, coming right back, because I want to talk more about this triggerfish part of it, putting other things in on the Snapper app, and the Reef Fish endorsement. Got questions already on the Facebook page about this. We'll ask those questions of Director Scott Bannon when we come back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you all along. Remember the Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Make sure to put the outdoors on there, or you'll go to our other page and it'll all be talk about the toll.
Yeah.
Or one of the debates the other night. So put that outdoors on there so you get in this conversation.
That's a toll to go to Dolphin Island. There's going to be a new toll there.
You heard it from Mike Ward. It's a new Dolphin. You're going to have Mayor Collier blowing your phone up here in a second. You're going to be banned from the island.
Yeah.
Be careful on that. Now, we're in a discussion about changes that went into effect. First day of this month, August 1st, some changes to our inshore, what we call it, the bag and the length, Director Bannon? Is that the regulation changes?
Yep.
Okay. All right, so we've got those speckled trout and flounder. We're talking about red snapper. By the way, just a quick one before I jump off this. On the snapper side, if y'all look back on Tuesday, whenever you would get the information in from the snapper app, the check, and it showed we didn't meet the quota, would you add other days?
Yes. My goal has been to fish very close to our location. The goal is not to go over. Now, last year we went over by 2,000 pounds. It was 0.02%. If we do that this year, we have to take it off of next year. So we're trying not to get into a negative trend, but we want to fish it very close. So if there is enough, I won't open for just one day. I don't think there's any value in that.
Right.
It's too risky to go over. But if we have enough to do a weekend, the next weekend we would consider would be Labor Day weekend. So I think, you know, we've had good weather the last couple of weekends, and this weekend, again, kind of a mixed bag of weather. We'll look at it through this week. We go through and clean up the data, correct errors that get in there because people put in some things wrong. It takes a couple of days to pull through it all, and we get the best number, and we'll make a decision of are we in the allocation number. We have a 10% buffer built in, and that's what we strive to make and not go over. So I should be able to tell you probably by next weekend, the end of this week, where we are.
Okay. So, and then back to what we were saying right before we went to the break. You said the memo that went out from Outdoor Alabama, I saw it, and from your department for amberjack. How do we? I know how to do the snapper jacket. Do it every weekend. Do you put the number of anglers? Here's a fish. Whole number. File it. Where would I put amberjack?
It's on the same app. It's in the Snapper Check app. And now that amberjack season is open, it will ask you for the option. It'll say, would you like to provide the information for amberjack? It becomes a tab that you can just do the same things. You put in the number of fish and the number of discards. It's exactly the same. It's still in the same app.
Yeah, I've never used that before. I've never done that before, so that'll be new to me.
Yeah, me
either. We opened it earlier in the year for trigger fish when it was open, but it was a very short season, and we really didn't advertise it. So this time we're trying to push it out for people to hopefully they've developed some confidence that the Snapper Check numbers and the program is designed to work to their advantage. And I want to really start to show with these other species that are super important to us in Alabama, triggerfish and amberjack, that we start collecting some hard data from the state level. And I never know, wink, wink, maybe we'll start to look at those species.
I like that kind of winking. So amberjack, report those today on the way back. Okay, let's talk about another offshore species, changeling, the cobia.
Yes, so we increased the size limit to 36 inches. The federal rule has not changed yet. There's a little bit of delay in those changes. It's going to come. So it gets to be confusing for the public, and I understand that. But in state waters, it would be 36 inches if you're catching ling along the beach. The federal rule is still 33 inches. If you're catching fish in federal waters, it is still 33 inches until that federal rule changes.
Do you have an idea when that is?
It's going to be probably later this year, toward the end of the year. You know, the government shutdown kind of stalled a few things that had to get kicked off again for rulemaking. And so I don't have the exact date of when that's going to change. You know, we're sometimes a little slow making changes. We thought it would probably be in effect by now, but it's not. But so anglers, and again, the enforcement guys in the field will be well aware of that and work with the public to
yeah, how does
sure
that work? Let's talk about it. So this afternoon, I catch a 34-inch ling. Okay, we're offshore. Okay, I'm going to come back into Dauphin Island.
Yes. So for now, we're going to take your word. We're going to look at what you're fishing and how you were fishing. We may look at your equipment and look at your GPS and see if that everybody tracks their history on there. Those are some tools to say, yes, we understand you were fishing offshore. You met the 33-inch limit. Remember, at the end of the day, this is really about trying to help the stock. So it's a progressive change to not reduce the bag limit for now. Let's see if we can help these cobia get a little bit stronger stock here in the Gulf. And the federal rule is coming. The goal is really to be on the same page that it's not confusing for the angler. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, our rule came out a little bit ahead of theirs.
And let's talk about that, because anecdotally, I know the talk about cobia or ling numbers not being what they were. Is that borne out in the science? Is that showing that to be true?
Well, there's some projects going on now to look at that a little bit harder. You know, the talk around the dock, you'll hear, just as soon as we make a change, the talk goes from being, I can't catch a cobia, to I'm having the best year I've ever had.
Yeah.
But, so, and we have seen that. you know, it just so happens Commissioner Blankenship caught an 85-pound cobia this year. So
that's a monster.
Some great cobia. It's a species that, again, is very near and dear to us here on the northern Gulf Coast. Florida made some changes last year, some pretty good changes to their rules that I think we will see an impact when those fish are moving back and forth. That they're not fished as heavily in Florida as they were. So I think all of this together may help us just kind of keep things on an even keel with the other rules that we have in place.
All right. So, I mean, that's another thing people need to add to their list of things to remember going forward from here. So amberjack and snapper and grouper today, people can keep those.
Correct.
They can keep a laying over 33 inches, but if you're in state waters, 36.
If you're catching it in state waters, it would be 36. That's correct.
Yeah.
Speaking of state waters, where are we? We had talked so much last year about the Inside 9 Miles Reef program. What's going on with that?
Well, we've completed putting some material out in most of those. We have a juvenile habitat area that has rocks and some smaller structure that the juveniles like. And we're about to start doing some surveys on that, but we received some reports from some divers who wanted to get a look at it already, and they said it was covered up with juvenile snapper. So that's exciting to hear that's working already, that the program hopefully will see some dividends down the road, and that the storm didn't affect it too bad, because those are always concerns on reefs that are nearer to shore. You know, the impact of heavy weather can be a little more detrimental, but I think we're already hearing the people catching fish. You know, they're generally smaller and some other things, but that's good. That I think we're going to see a pretty robust reef system within the 9 miles.
And how many reefs are y'all planning on putting out?
Well, we have some funding available to continue to put out reefs over the next couple of years. I'd be lying if I told you the exact number. Craig Newton, our biologist that manages our reef program, has every day he's working on things to get areas surveyed, to get plans together, to deploy reefs, what type of area. And then the other side of that is the monitoring. And so that's where, you know, this reef fish endorsement that I know you're going to bring up it comes into play, is that we've done so much to create what I call the world's premier artificial reef zone. Tremendous amount of science behind it with our partners from like Auburn and University of South Alabama. We've generated a tremendous amount of data, and we have a good snapshot of what our reef zone looks like. Now we have to monitor that. We're in state management. We have to make good decisions, and we're out of funding that we used for the science. And so now we're at a monitoring phase, and so that's what the purpose of the reef fish endorsement is, to help us to maintain that reef zone. That we're a self-funded agency. We only survive off of license fees and a few other little incomes, and then we use matching federal dollars. So this is kind of a user-based fee. It's a fee, the endorsement, for people that are going to participate in reef fish fishing, and that is all reef fish, amberjack, grouper, snapper. They're all included in that reef fish complex. And so then we'll use that money to pay the scientists to continue to do those surveys and the monitoring of the reef, so that we understand how healthy it is.
Now, I imagine that for most people it'll be a complete duplication, but I want to just disambiguate, you know, before somebody gets confused. So reef fish, because people said, oh, you got to have this endorsement if you go offshore. Well, and to a guy like me, that means reef fishing offshore. But somebody who was fishing pelagic, somebody who's fishing marlin and tuna, they if that's all they did, they don't have to have this, right?
They do not. If you're an HMS fisherman and that's all you do, that is fine. If you're a mackerel fisherman and you don't care about anything else, that is fine. And you can technically, you know, while you're out there, it's not illegal if you're trying to catch a mackerel and a big snapper swam up and bit the hook, but you just wouldn't be able to it without having that endorsement. And so for a private angler, it's $10. We just needed some funding to support the research. We didn't want to put a huge burden on the public. And I kind of used the term, I said, with this reef zone, we've saved you the $10 in gas. If you'll give us the $10 to help us keep all these fish nice and close and keep a healthy population.
So this is a yearly, this is, as people buy their licenses each year, if they're going to, you know, fish, reef fish, this is, they go on, let's say they're on the website, for example, and you go through, and the way the website works, you can click this thing and click that thing. There's going to be click reef fish endorsement?
That's correct. And it won't show up in the system until we begin selling the license year 20 licenses, which will be for private anglers, will be August 26th. You can buy your new fishing license for the next year. The endorsement is good for the same time period from September 1 of this year to the end of August next year. So you can buy it any time during the year. You don't have to buy it right away, but I would encourage people, when you're buying your fishing license, go ahead and buy that endorsement so that you don't forget about it and that you have it. And again, our enforcement folks will be checking people and making sure that people are in compliance. And now you can buy things on the phone. It's readily accessible to you. And our commercial anglers and charter anglers will purchase theirs September 1 when their license renews.
So what about lifetime license holders?
So this endorsement applies to anybody that is fishing except those under the age of 16. So if you have a disability license, if you have a lifetime license, if you're participating in a Veterans Appreciation event, the event will buy one endorsement because it's one license for that event. And so, yes, lifetime license holders. I have heard from the public that there's been some concern that there's not a lifetime option for that. So we will meet with the advisory board and we'll talk with the commissioner. And I think that's an option that we add in the future, that if a person would like to buy a lifetime version, because we do have a lifetime duck stamp, and that's kind of how I compare it. It's similar to having a duck stamp.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, because precedent, for me, Mike and I both hold lifetimes. And for on the hunting side, even though I hold a lifetime hunting license, each year I go on and I'm going to purchase a WMA permit, because the places I duck hunt. I'm going to purchase a duck stamp, state duck stamp, you know, and I have to purchase the federal separately. So I have add-ons like that I already do. And then I guess going forward on the hunting side this year, you're going to have the baiting stamp if you want to hunt over corn. So I mean, even though you have a lifetime license, you have to add things on.
Right.
That's correct. And we it's not, you know, a new type of endorsement. It's new to us. We have not done that in the past. We have a law that allowed us to do it. And I'm not big on just adding these to people, but the reef fish endorsement and the continuous surveying and assessing of this reef zone is critical to the citizens of Alabama in general, because remember the economic impact to maintaining this reef zone, but also the ability for anglers to go and enjoy catching fish. And that money is set aside. We can track it specifically. If down the road people say, how much did you generate and how is it spent, we can show that it will be used towards reef fish work, whether it's paying our staff to compile the data, paying the scientists to go out and do the research in the field. It is all geared towards research.
You know, one thing that I see that could be a little bit of an issue, you know, a lot of times we invite people to go fishing with us, and, you know, we forget to ask them, you know, did you get a fishing license? Did you get, most people have a fishing license, but did you get a reef permit license? Is there some provision that you might would have that a boat could have, pay extra for something, so that if you had somebody, let's just say, came from Birmingham that just come down to fish one day with you or something and didn't get that permit, is there maybe some provision there?
There is not currently, and because another aspect of the reef fish endorsement is to identify how many people truly fish on the reef zone. And this includes non-residents. So if you're from another state, and you, even if you come get a trip license for 7 days, you still need to get the reef fish endorsement.
Okay.
And then we have your information, and it gives us the ability to send surveys. I would like to send a survey at the end of this season to people who fished under the EFP for the last 2 years of, you know, what were your takeaways? You know, we want to narrow down that field of people and get a better understanding of the effort that is actually on that reef zone. So that is part of the reason that it's an individual, except for charter and commercial, and we have those numbers from them. We can get the numbers of people that participate.
All right. Well, okay. We'll have to make sure everybody hearing us now, but we'll talk about this some more going forward, especially starting August 26th, you said?
That's correct. The new licenses will go on sale.
All All right, very good. Director Scott Bannon, thank you for your time. Thanks for being on with us.
Thank you, Scott.
Hey, guys, hope you have a great day and enjoy the rest of your week.
Will do.
Thank you.
Will do. Coming right back to wrap it up here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Big thank you. Scott Bannon, Director of Alabama Marine Resources. A lot of changes there. Go to OutdoorAlabama.com and check them out there. Make sure you're in the know before you head out there today, tomorrow, Monday.
Yeah. What you can catch and what you can keep.
That's right. That is important. Yes. Also want to give you a heads up, quick heads up. We'll talk about this more in shows to come. But next month, because next month is September, man. I can go check a millet field, make sure I got everything ready for dove season. But also coming up September 21st and 22nd out at the grounds, this is going to be the Gulf Coast Hunting and Fishing Expo going on. They still have room for vendors. They said September 1st is going to be the deadline for vendors. You get a 10 by 10 booth, so you're in the hunting and fishing business. Nonprofits are going to be free, so I guess if you got a conservation organization, good place to – I mean, all the conservation banquets that happen in the fall.
Right.
Like all of them.
Yeah,
a lot.
Know,
other than the Turkey Federation, everything else is in the fall.
Yep.
You know, we're talking about CCA, talking about Ducks Unlimited, talking about Delta Waterfowl, missing some. I mean, QDMA, you know, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. What a great time to have your booth out there. And instead of just depending on the banquet, you sign people up then to come to the banquet.
Be awesome. Yeah.
So this is happening.
This is the first year, right? This is the first year.
First
part.
Year, yeah. September 21st and 22nd. So a Saturday and a Sunday out at the grounds. And for old folks like me, Greater Gulf State Fairgrounds. But the hipsters call it the grounds.
Yes.
The grounds. That's going to be, I think it opens each day at 9 and goes to like 5. But we'll talk more about this going forward. This is coming up in September. Put that on your to-do list. But if you are somebody's got a product or you got a nonprofit, whatever, reach out to them. If you'll just go to Facebook and look for the Gulf Coast Hunting and Fishing Expo, it'll pop up and get the information and contact there. And we'll have folks on from the show, the upcoming show, on an upcoming show of this one.
Yes.
FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Also, I was off in the Rocky Mountains when the rescheduled Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament happened. And how'd y'all do?
We did good. We caught a lot of fish. We caught a bunch of amberjack.
Yeah.
Fishing for king mackerel around rigs, and we were like 300, 400 yards.
Are we going to those rigs today?
Yes,
okay.
We are.
Okay.
Yes, we're going to catch an amberjack
today,
okay. I promise
all right.
you.
All right.
But there's so many amberjack out there, that's why it just drives me crazy when you can't
right.
catch amberjack during snapper season. But we're like 400 yards away from the oil rig trolling for king mackerel.
And the amberjack are out there?
They're hitting like king mackerel.
Don't they know they're supposed to be up against the rig legs?
Yeah, no, they don't understand that.
So y'all caught some amberjack?
Yeah, we caught a bunch of amberjack and some nice ones. I'm talking about 40 to 55 pounds, some big amberjack. And we caught some kings, some nice kings up to like 32 pounds. And
snapper?
We only had time to catch 6. I had to get in. We king mackerel fished, and we caught a couple of barracuda. We came in first and third place in barracuda.
All right. Tell me about the barracuda.
The barracuda was 22 pounds and
ooh,
23 pounds. Nah, not that big, you know.
Nah,
and then
I forget what
Dylan, my grandson, came in third place with. I don't even remember what it was, 19 pounds or something like that.
You catch those while you're trolling for
kings?
While
we're trolling for king, yeah. But also there was a 61-pound king mackerel caught. Right out there by us. So, a really big king mackerel.
Who needs
big
to go to Fushan anymore?
No, I got to think hard about that next year.
Stay here at home, man. Keep it close to home.
Yeah, so we caught a few snapper on the way in. We just ran out of time because we was trolling for trying to catch
but
a big king.
First and third in barracuda.
First and third in barracuda, yes. Mm-hmm. So, we did good. And there's a lot of good fish caught on the Young Angler Tournament this year.
And you know what? It's a lot better weather.
Oh, it's beautiful weather.
I saw the pictures.
Yes, the weather was great. No complaints on the weather. If you had a 18, 19 footer, it might have been just a little choppy for you a little bit, but anything over 20 foot, I mean, it was fine.
And if you're in the whiz bang, the Cadillac riding, it's
no
issue.
No problem.
No issue. Didn't even spill my Diet Coke when you run like that.
Yeah.
All right, so we've got still fishing, obviously, this month, and but we're going to start transitioning a little bit. You know where my mind stays, in the woods.
Yes.
And there's a lot to be done right now. I've got checking millet fields, getting ready to start mowing, you know, some millet fields and getting dove fields prepared.
Yep.
I've got the soybeans are hanging on. Deer hammering them hard the last week and a half, last 10 days. I got cameras on the beans, and it's been like ding, 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 ding. Where it used to be just like a couple times a night I'd get an update. Now it's like all night I have to turn my ringer off on my phone from that.
Yeah, they're hitting it.
Oh, they're hitting it hard. And I don't, it's weird. It may be because usually they hit them like when they're earlier, but now they've, I don't know, something last 10 days they've really started hitting them.
Yeah.
I got some decent bucks on camera starting to show. It, not just show main beans, but starting to show some branching and some developments of G2 and G3s on them. And so,
we're going to have a good show coming up, too, on hog traps and hog hunting. I got some folks coming that got some new traps. It's going to be fine. G&D's stocking them. Lee at G&D.
What's up, Lee?
Yep.
I'll be seeing you soon.
He's going to be stocking the hog traps. They're really unique. We're going to have a good show on it.
All right, good deal. We got to get out of here. Prep Sports Report on the way next. See y'all next week.